Thank you. Justice Berger, Justice Jacobs, Justice Ridgely, and may it please the court, my name is Stephanie Ballard, and I represent Brandon Givens, the appellant in this matter. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Givens was suspended from racing under what the Harness Racing Commission calls a summary suspension. It's essentially an emergency suspension. The commission allows the licensee who is summarily suspended to request a summary suspension hearing within 3 racing days, at which, and I'm quoting from Rule 10.2.3.3, the sole issue is whether the licensee's license should remain suspended pending a final disciplinary hearing and ruling. It's essentially the equivalent of a probable cause hearing. Mr. Givens timely requested the Rule 10.2.3.3 summary suspension hearing, and it was held, but from there, the process was apparently abandoned. Contrary to commission rules, no written order was ever issued following the summary suspension hearing. However, Mr. Givens was verbally told that he would remain suspended. And what happened or didn't happen next is the reason we're here. The summary suspension is only supposed to remain in effect under the commission's own rule pending the final disciplinary hearing.
Can you help me with some procedural background? Ultimately, there was a hearing, and a separate suspension was imposed as a result of that hearing.
Correct, after the Superior Court's decision below.
Right, and was that appealed?
That was not appealed, Your Honor.
So what would be prohibited if the writ of prohibition issued at this point?
Your Honor, the remedy we're seeking would be dismissal of the original underlying charges because of the original violation of due process. If a due process violation occurs ab initio, the subsequent process, if any, is really immaterial. There's no way to cure the initial deprivation.
I gather, you know, the broad argument that you're making is the way the commission proceeded or failed to proceed constituted a violation of Mr. Givens' due process rights.
Correct.
For that reason, the commission exceeded its jurisdiction. Therefore, its decision, its action was jurisdictionally void and has to be undone.
Exactly.
Putting aside problem I have with your argument that a constitutional violation amounts to a jurisdictional failure, what precisely was the violation? Was it that there was no final hearing after the 3-day emergency suspension hearing?
It was the failure to promptly schedule and hold a hearing on the merits, which the U.S. Supreme Court in Barry versus Barchi held was a due process requirement.
Well, the rule, I'm looking here at Rule 10.232, states that a licensee whose license has been summarily suspended is entitled to a hearing on the summary suspension not later than the 3rd racing day after the license was summarily suspended. That happened, correct?
That happened. That was okay. The initial summary hearing.
Your argument is there had to be, you know, that's something like a preliminary injunction. There has to be a final hearing before that suspension has any final effect.
The license
constitutionally final effect, is that correct?
Well, constitutionally, the licensee is guaranteed a prompt hearing on the merits, which is what we're calling the final hearing.
But the rule doesn't provide explicitly for a second evidentiary hearing on the summary suspension, correct?
Oh, no, Your Honor. What we're arguing is he had his summary suspension hearing.
No, you're saying there have to be 2 hearings on the summary suspension. One is after the 3 days and then another one?
No, the second hearing, the hearing where the due process violation occurred, is the hearing on the merits. The summary suspension hearing is there probable cause?
The hearing on the merits would take the form of an appeal to the entire board, would it
no,
not?
No, Your Honor. It's another hearing in front of the Board of Judges. Where they hear.
So it is like a it's a trial on the merits as opposed to a preliminary
Yes, it's a trial on the merits. And the first level is before the Board of Judges.
Is it correct that the rules do not explicitly provide in their text for that type of hearing?
They do. 10.2.3.3, the sole issue is whether the licensee's license should remain suspended pending a final disciplinary hearing and ruling. That states that that final disciplinary, that next hearing is to occur. The problem is it doesn't state when. It doesn't even state a prompt final disciplinary.
So there's the rule 10.233 alludes to or refers to a final disciplinary hearing.
It refers to it, yes.
But there's nothing else, nothing in the rule that creates a mechanic for getting there?
Well, Your Honor, it would then, assuming they just scheduled one and it was held in the ordinary course, then you'd go to the rest of the due process rules in which, you know, the licensees.
Okay, so he was entitled to that second hearing.
He was entitled to a hearing on the
he
merits.
He didn't ask for it. Your argument is he didn't have to. The commission should have sua sponte scheduled it, and by not doing it, they violated your client's constitutional rights.
The commission
and your
had
client was entitled to sit back and wait for them to do that, and lo and behold, they didn't, and therefore, he's now arguing that not only did they violate his constitutional rights, but they now exceeded their jurisdiction, and their judgment is void.
Well, the
isn't that a little self-serving from a practical standpoint?
Your Honor, the question is where does the burden lie in providing due process? And the federal case law universally states that it lies with the government body that wishes to take action against the license.
Well, they're talking about perhaps the burden once you get to the hearing.
No, the burden of assuring a prompt final hearing is the language used in the cases, Your Honor.
And how long did it take for the hearing that was held to be scheduled?
We actually, because of the position Mr. Givens was in, we actually requested a hearing maybe November of last year, and it was scheduled in January.
Okay. If that second hearing, what's referred to as a final disciplinary hearing, had been held promptly, then what would have been at issue? Is the charge that in fact turned out to be an issue at the hearing that was held months later, correct?
Right, the merits of the drug,
the
alleged drug
charge,
yes.
To which your client pled no contest.
Correct.
Doesn't that moot this case?
No, Your Honor, because in the cases like Barry and Spinelli and Gershenfeld, the licensee was not required to submit to the hearing. The issue before the court that the court decided in those cases was.
Let me ask the question differently. If your client pled no contest to that claim 6 months after, perhaps later than there should have been, than should have been the case, why shouldn't we conclude that he would have pled no contest had there been a prompt hearing? And what is, you know, what is this all about?
Well,
and if that's the case, then why isn't this a moot appeal? Because the hearing that he would have, that he says he was entitled to, would have resulted in precisely what happened 6 months later, and indeed he benefited.
Because our argument is the question when the petition for a writ was filed in Superior Court is, was there a due process violation at that point? And anything that happened subsequent is not relevant to that determination.
That's like a gotcha argument, isn't it? He sits back, doesn't do anything, even though he knows he's entitled to a final hearing. And I think one can infer we know now why he did sit back, waits for the commission to do something, they don't do anything. He then claims constitutional violation and that he's entitled, no matter what happened in the second hearing, to have the whole thing wiped out.
It's the commission's burden to schedule that prompt final hearing. At that point, if he wants to say, I want DNA testing done, I think this, I think that, that's fine. Had they scheduled a prompt final hearing after the summary hearing, we wouldn't be here. They would have done their job, and there was no administrative burden on them to do that. So the onus is on them, and yes, he is.
Well, number one, there's a question of whether as a constitutional matter, you know, your client who had some rights wasn't required to invoke them. But even if he wasn't, and even if the commission unconstitutionally delayed the hearing, which finally took place, don't we have at most a constitutional violation that for which there's no remedy?
No, Your Honor. The remedy would be dismissal of the original charges. He was placed in a position by virtue of the Superior Court's decision whereby it said, we're not going to do anything. The commission had indicated that it was not going to take action unless Mr. Givens came to them and asked them to do so. He didn't know how long an appeal would take. He didn't know an appeal would be successful. He was in a position where he either lets the suspension, summary suspension, go on indefinitely, or he takes some step to request a hearing with reservation of the rights that we're arguing here. To
at the administrative hearing that ultimately was held, did your client maintain that the proceeding could not go forward because there was a lack of jurisdiction?
We retained our right to the jurisdictional objection, but agreed to go forward with the hearing.
So what does that mean? You agreed to go forward subject to what?
Well, the cases have said that
appellate review?
This appeal was pending. We had filed this appeal, asked for the hearing with reservation of our rights on this appeal. But again, the issue is, was there a due process violation at the time he filed for a writ in Superior Court? If so, our argument is those charges should be voided. They had 6 months. 6 months was too long. They had violated his rights. And the onus was on them.
Where does 6 months come out of this? Is that a magic number?
That just happens to be the period of time between when he was summarily suspended and when suit was filed. That's why I'm saying 6 months. However, in the Barchi case.
What if it had been 4 months? That would also have been a constitutional violation?
Yes, Your Honor. There's no hard and fast rule for what is prompt, but the U.S. Supreme Court in Barchi found that 15 days was too long, where both the New York statute did not guarantee a prompt hearing, just like this one, and it did not actually provide Mr. Barchi with a hearing in only 15 days in that case, because a livelihood was at stake.
And in that case, was it disputed that the violation had occurred?
He did dispute that the violation had occurred.
But your client did not.
He never got the opportunity at that point.
Well, I'm not talking at that point. At no point has your client ever maintained that the violation didn't occur? Didn't he plead no contest?
He pled no contest, so he hasn't admitted or denied legally that it occurred. But
okay, well, what I'm getting at is this: it sounds an awful lot like someone got caught, so to speak, violating one of the commission's rules, went to an attorney and was told, just sit back, don't do anything, let's see what happens, if anything, and if we're lucky, there won't be a hearing scheduled soon enough, and then we can file suit and say that you were denied your constitutional rights, and then by the time we get to a hearing, it'll be too late. So even though you committed this violation and you're not contesting it, we'll get it all thrown out.
Well,
it sounds like a trap, if you will.
Well, I'll add that I wasn't his original attorney. However, we maintain the burden is on the commission to schedule that hearing promptly. And if they don't, they put themselves at risk that those charges will be voided because of the due process constitutional violation. I just don't see how there's any daylight between this case and the Barchi case. The New York statute was actually better than the rule here, but it still provided for no time frame on the hearing, and it wasn't held promptly in 15 days, the court held.
What does the Delaware statute say?
There is no statute, Your Honor. There's only rule 10.3.10233.
Ms. Ballard, your entire due process argument rests on the premise that there must be a separate hearing on the merits at the Board of Judges level following the suspension
hearing, is that correct?
There must be a final hearing on the merits promptly following the summary suspension hearing. I can't recall, but I believe there may be a mechanism whereby either the commission or the licensee could request to go directly to the commission, but a hearing, a final hearing.
Well, I think the everything in your brief indicates that you're talking about a second hearing before the Board of Judges. But, and this leads to my question, can't the rule properly read mean that there should be a final hearing in the merits before the board? That is, it's up to the board or the commission, the full commission, to conduct that hearing. And that is provided for by the rules, and it's up to, under the rules, it's up to the aggrieved party, here your client, to do that.
Your Honor, under the rules, it is not up to anybody. The rules are silent as to the burden of getting this hearing scheduled. So by the case law and just by logic, the agency is the party gathering the board together, bringing the witnesses in. It's the agency's burden to get that hearing scheduled. The rules are silent as to that. They do not put the burden on Mr. Givens. What the commission has done is they have tried to equate the secondary drug testing rule to say that has some effect on hearings when on the face of it, it doesn't. I'm into my rebuttal time, so if
you'd like to save it, that's fine.
Thank you.
Let's start off with the basic question here. Why can't or why didn't the commission or the board or the panel or whoever schedule a second hearing, even if the Mr. Givens had opportunity to request it? Why wasn't it just put down as this is going to happen on such and such a day?
Your Honors, I believe is reflected in the record and was came out in the Superior Court transcripts. In this case, the appellant, Mr. Givens, requested not confirmatory drug testing of his urine sample, but DNA testing of his urine sample. And that had not been done by the commission previously. And we, in consultation with our drug testing service provider, they indicated that typically DNA testing is not provided by their other clients, like the Federal Department of Transportation, for various reasons, and it's all covered in the federal regulations. So our initial position was that the confirmatory testing that's provided for under the Commission's rules would be confirmatory drug testing. In other words, a confirmatory test is a test to confirm the presence of drugs in the urine.
But what does that have to do with the hearing?
Well, what typically happens is the judges will go and if there's a positive urine test, they'll contact the licensee and say you've had a positive urine test. They will give the licensee they'll be summarily suspended. A hearing will be held within three racing days, as was done in this case. And at that hearing, or the licensee would make an election to have the secondary urine sample tested or not tested. If the election was to not have it tested, the subsequent hearing before the judges would be scheduled immediately. If the licensee elected to have the urine tested and the test came back non-confirmatory, the case would be dismissed. If the test came back confirming the test, then the hearing would be scheduled.
So it's up to the Mr. Givens to decide after the first 3-day hearing whether he wants to have confirmatory testing or not, right?
That's exactly correct.
And he didn't let you know.
That's he requested DNA testing but not confirmatory drug testing. Exactly correct.
And was he told DNA testing is not available?
Yes, the commission advised Mr. Givens' counsel that the DNA testing.
Putting aside the DNA testing, sure. And putting aside for a moment confirmatory lab testing, walk me through, or walk us through, how these rules are intended to operate. That is, we know that the rules provide, mandate a suspension hearing before the Board of Judges within 3 days of the suspension, if I have that right.
That's correct. That's correct. And that, and there's no dispute that that was timely held.
Now, the argument that's being made to us is that the rules also create a right to a second hearing on the merits of the charge that led to the suspension. A, is that right? And B, if so, who conducts that hearing? Is it the second hearing before the Board of Judges, or is it the whole commission?
There would typically be a second hearing before the Board of Judges, whereby the Board of Judges would call the hearing.
Is that the practice?
That's the practice.
Is there anything in the rules that spells out the mechanics for how that's supposed to come about, or are we dealing with a blank slate?
Well, Rule 10.2.2.2 provides, on their own motion or on receipt of a complaint from an official or other person regarding the action. Rule 10.2.2.2.
Okay.
This is what I believe is the relevant rule. It says, on their own motion or on receipt of a complaint from an official or other person regarding the actions of a licensee.
I'm sorry, you're not speaking up.
I'm sorry. It says, on their own motion or on receipt of a complaint from an official or other person regarding the actions of a licensee, the presiding judge or judges may conduct an inquiry and disciplinary hearing regarding a licensee's actions. So that would be the authority for the Board of Judges, on their own motion, to conduct a hearing on a licensee's actions, in this case, a drug violation.
And they could schedule it when they want, 5 years out?
There isn't a timing requirement built into our rule, but the practice is, as I said, as soon as the licensee, with respect to a drug violation, as soon as the licensee makes his or her election with respect to confirmatory drug testing, the hearing is either scheduled if the election is to forego confirmatory testing, and it is then deferred till the confirmatory testing comes back, and if the test is confirmed, then the hearing is scheduled, and then if it's not confirmed, then the matter is dismissed.
So what went wrong here?
What went wrong here is that we never got a decision from the appellant as to whether he wanted confirmatory testing or not. So the commission, as the appellant was suspended, and the commission had communicated to appellant's counsel that there would be that there was not going to be any DNA testing, the commission was waiting for a response from appellant's counsel. Appellant later changed counsel, and the response from appellant's new counsel, who's present today, was that too much time had passed, and they filed with the Superior Court, leading to our being here today.
But well, you did get a demand for a hearing to be scheduled, ultimately.
Well, what actually happened, Your Honor, is that on November 23rd, 2010, after appellant's new counsel was retained and filed in the Superior Court, the commission noticed the hearing or the judges noticed a hearing, and at that point it's reflected in the record at appendix 69. The appellant objected to the hearing and in fact filed a motion for stay of administrative proceedings, so the commission would have proceeded to have the hearing at that point.
The rules, the commission can notice a hearing without a request for confirmation.
Yes, they can. That's correct.
So why?
Wait a second. I'm sorry, here.
Go ahead. What?
What I was going to say is the commission, after having the suit filed against the commission in Superior Court, deemed that an election to proceed to hearing, because essentially it was a suit claiming we hadn't given a hearing, so we acted as promptly as we could to provide a hearing.
Well, you have what appears to be an unwritten and somewhat informal arrangement where after a drug test that's failed, there is a very prompt hearing within 3 days, and that's taken care of. But then there's this never-never land of, well, the party, the affected party, can ask for confirmation or say he doesn't want confirmation, but that if the affected party doesn't speak up, then that three-day suspension becomes an indefinitely long suspension without any further review. Isn't that the gist of what the way the commission operates?
I'll say this was the first and only case that has come before the commission where it has not been decided, or where the hearings haven't gone promptly, and there hasn't been a prompt election for the confirmatory testing or no confirmatory testing. All right. So we haven't been faced with the problem.
All right. Well, be that as it may.
Yes.
One of the questions that's before us is whether that circumstance, that is the failure to have a prompt second hearing, was a constitutional violation. I'm answering that question. This next question is, if it was a constitutional violation, did it somehow operate to deprive or to strip the Harness Racing Commission of jurisdiction? And thirdly, if so, is the consequence that all of the disciplinary action that was taken against Mr. Givens gets eradicated legally?
Well, Your Honor, I'd say first it wasn't a constitutional violation.
Why not?
Because appellant had his hearing before the commission, and he was under his summary suspension. So he had a hearing. The case cited from New York by
the
appellant.
The argument here is that it isn't enough just to have a hearing. It's got to be prompt, and the lack of promptitude itself is a violation of the Constitution.
He had a hearing within 3 days. And that wasn't the case in the New York case. Well, with respect to the next hearing, again, he could have had a hearing had he asked for it. The commission would have scheduled his hearing promptly if there hadn't been this dispute with respect to the
testing. Why isn't the Bargee case on point?
In Bargee, there wasn't that hearing within 3 days. Our statute is entirely different than New York's. Ours provides specifically for a hearing within 3 days on the summary suspension. And the problem in New York apparently was that they didn't provide a prompt hearing. They went for 15 days. We don't do that. There's a hearing within 3 days. I think that meets constitutional muster in this case.
All right. Is that on the merits? Is that hearing within 3 days on the merits?
It was not a full hearing. It was essentially a hearing to as it's stated, as to whether the summary suspension should continue or not.
Well,
and typically,
what does that mean? Does that mean he has a drug problem? Or does that mean that there's a prima facie case that he has a drug problem? What does it mean? Or what happens as a practical matter at those hearings?
Well, it states that the Board of Judges shall conduct a hearing on a summary suspension in the same manner, that's this rule 10.2.3.3, in the same manner as other disciplinary hearings. So that would mean the same as any subsequent hearing, except the sole issue, after hearing a summary suspension, the sole issue is whether the licensee's license should remain suspended pending a final disciplinary hearing and ruling. So in this case, appellant could have presented his full case at that summary suspension hearing as to why his test should not have been suspended and why there was a problem with the testing. However, he did it.
This. Does somebody explain to the judges that we did a test, he had a positive result from the test, it appears he has a drug problem, we should not reinstate him? Is there evidence? Is there anything on the merits?
Well, there's the positive drug test is there, and I believe that there's somebody from the testing company who's present for the hearing.
So it is on the merits, because if if there's a positive drug test, that is the merit of the case, isn't it?
That's correct. They are considered, you know, there has been a positive test. There, at that initial hearing, there is a positive drug test that's considered as evidenced by the judges.
But I gather that 3 days is not enough time for the affected party to get a second test done to see whether the first one was accurate, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's why we have the other procedures for the split samples and secondary testing and a subsequent hearing.
Okay, so would it be fair to say that at the three-day hearing, basically the commission or its representatives puts on the evidence of a test was done by this laboratory, and here's somebody from the laboratory who is going to confirm that this is the test result, and it shows positive for whatever the drug was, right?
Correct. Yes, Your Honor.
And at that point, the affected party, with or without an attorney, would be able to cross-examine that drug representative, the tester, and would be able to perhaps put on evidence that you got the wrong animal, you know, this was tainted because it fell on the ground or whatever.
Exactly correct, Your Honor. Just as I read, Rule 10.2.3.3 provides the Board of Judges shall conduct a hearing on a summary suspension in the same manner as other disciplinary hearings. So the
and as a practical matter, and I know this is not part of the record and is not going to affect anything, but does anybody ever win at the three-day hearing? In other words, are there ever situations where a drug test comes back and the aggrieved party is able to demonstrate at that three-day hearing that, no, there was a mistake made here, this violation did not occur, or I was not the party to it?
Your Honor, I understand your question, but I'm not able to answer it.
Okay.
Have the second hearing taken place promptly, as distinguished from 6 months or so later, there would have been at least an opportunity to defend on the initial drug charge, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
That opportunity was later afforded at the hearing that in fact did take place, correct?
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
At that second hearing, Mr. Givens pled no contest to the charge that would have been the subject of the second hearing whenever it took place.
That's correct, Your Honor. And my understanding of the hearing is that he admitted his drug use.
Okay. My question is, does that not moot this proceeding?
Yes, Your Honor. I think this proceeding is entirely moot. Mr. Givens is not presently suspended under his summary suspension. He is now suspended under a permanent suspension that came into effect at that second hearing. So under this court's decision in American Littoral Society v. Bernie Conscious, the court will ordinarily decline to decide moot issues.
I thought the other side's position is that there was no, because of the constitutional violation, there was no jurisdiction to proceed. And if there's no jurisdiction, then the suspension itself should be vacated.
Well, those may have been arguments that could have been raised at the hearing before the judges, but they weren't.
I thought she said that they reserved the jurisdictional argument.
They made none of those arguments before the judges. All of the jurisdictional arguments could have been made to the judges. That then the judge's decision could have been appealed to the commission.
You're saying failure to exhaust administrative remedies?
Or failure to, you know, this matters before.
Judicata, I mean, what?
This matters before the court for a writ of prohibition, which, as you know, is a very limited writ available only where there's no other avenue. This appellant had another avenue. He could have presented all of the constitutional claims could have been presented to the judges, to the commission, to the superior court, and then to this court. And because there was another adequate remedy at law, the Delaware court's prior decisions indicate that you really don't even consider the constitutional questions. If you can't get past that first the first step of there being no adequate remedy at law, you don't address the constitutional, you don't address the constitutional questions.
Are the rules that you've been citing to us, are they still in effect in that form?
In another way,
has the commission decided that all of this justifies another look at their rules?
I have two things. One, the rule has been changed with respect to confirmatory testing to specify that it's confirmatory drug testing. But that was not in place at the time. And in addition, the commission has created a form that is to be used by the Board of Judges, essentially saying it's a notice form to any licensee who's being who tests positive one time and then is subject to secondary testing, that says essentially you have 5 days to advise us of whether you want your urine to be secondary sent to a lab at your expense if secondarily tested, or decline that. If you don't respond within 5 days, it will be declined, and then the commission will schedule a hearing within 10 days of receipt of your notice, either to consider if you decline or 10 days of receipt of the test back if you indicate that you want testing. So yes, in response to advice by the Superior Court at the conclusion of our first hearing on this, the commission put in place a form that addressed the concern that arose in this case. And I see I'm at the end of my time, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Your Honor, let me start just so that you are clear as to what happened at the summary suspension hearing, the hearing he had in 3 days. There were no witnesses present. There was no one for him to cross-examine, no one from the lab present, and I'm not saying there should have been. It's a probable cause hearing. They had one page from the lab showing positive test. This was not a hearing on the merits. It was a preliminary probable cause hearing. His opportunity to challenge the charges would not occur until the final disciplinary hearing was scheduled. Counsel referred to 10.2.2.2. That was never argued before, and I don't believe it's applicable here because 10.2.3.3 is more specific, and it clearly envisions, I believe it mandates, a final disciplinary hearing because it says the summary suspension can only remain in place pending that final hearing. So the licensee is guaranteed that. The question is, whose burden is it to get that done? And we believe the case law and just simple logic, the administrative agency schedules hearings, holds hearings, decides when they're available. The burden is on the agency to get that scheduled.
But shouldn't we be acknowledging the fact here, which is that a hearing, not that it can't be scheduled, but it would be inefficient to schedule such a hearing until you know whether the licensee wants to have the confirmatory drug test or not. And so, you know, whatever the correctness of your position may be with respect to the burden shouldn't be on the licensee, the licensee is being offered an opportunity to get more evidence on his behalf, and the commission is waiting to hear what he wants to do. Why is that a problem?
Here's why it's a problem, Your Honor, because I think the court should go back and look at Rule 5.1.8.7. This is what the commission is relying on about this election. This election process is nowhere memorialized anywhere in the rules and regulations. It may well have been a practice, but the problem is we have no objective codified statement saying we expect our licensees to say yes or no to drug testing, and if they do or don't, here's what's going to happen. So no process and no record.
So your client therefore can sit back, allow the burden of this suspension to accrue to his detriment, and then if enough time passes, he can then claim foul, constitutional violation, game's over.
Your Honor, there was a constitutional violation. But as to the drug testing, if they want to rely on this unwritten process, at a minimum, they need to put in the record Mr. Givens, you've asked for DNA testing. We're not going to do that. Or, Mr. Givens, you need to tell us if you want drug testing or not. My record was 4 pages. It was 3 pages about the drug test, and it was the initial notice that you're going to be summarily suspended before the 3-day hearing. They didn't even issue a ruling, as they were required to, after the 3-day hearing, which would have said, presumably it would have said, and now you're entitled to a final hearing. He didn't even have that. So what he had was a verbal statement that you are suspended, and that was the entirety
of the
process.
Well, he knew enough to ask for DNA testing, right?
Again, it's not in the record, Your Honor. The discussions at the Superior Court, he said, yes, he did have a conversation with someone about that, but it's the commission is the agency regulating this sport. It's incumbent on them to memorialize these things. There is nothing. I had no record. I had 4 pages that stopped before the summary suspension hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate the arguments. We'll take them under consideration, and we will adjourn.
Please rise.